I Used to Listen to KBSU, an origin story. I'm Eric Jones, and thanks for joining us for this look back on 40 years of our station's history. Boise State Public Radio began in the late 1970s as a student-run station called KBSU. The goal was to bring progressive radio to a town that didn't have it. The unique sound of KBSU played an important role in influencing the musical culture of Boise. Now, let's go back to 1976.
Three, two, one.
Progressive Radio, KBSU.
My name is Gary McCabe. I was the first general manager of KBSU back in the days when it was a student-run radio station. And then before that, I was the one who pretty much put the whole thing together, with some help from quite a few people along the way. I knew I wanted to be in radio because I grew up listening to all those great rock and roll disc jockeys, and I wanted to be like those people.
1 o'clock, last hour of horseplay here in the Lou Jack program. It's about 57 degrees outside. Big fat daddy.
Of course, my parents wanted me to go to college, so I went to college. And then I met a fellow not long after I started school who told me that at one time Boise State had a closed circuit radio station on campus. And he told me about all this equipment that was in the old Votech Center. And I went down there, and there's all this antiquated old equipment, but it gave me the idea, well, cool, maybe we can start a radio station.
Gary McCabe was the driving force that helped the station get licensed and get on air at Boise State University.
What I did is I started a club called the Student Broadcast Association. And then I went around campus basically handing out flyers to anybody that might be interested in wanting to work at a college radio station. And so then I had a meeting over in the sub, and quite a few people showed up. We probably had about 30 people or so. In that meeting was Carl Scheider, by the way, who works here, along with Linda Laz, who used to do a program here, and Victor Picanha was there, and Arthur Ballinger. He was one of the first people to work at KBSU as well. So some of these people are still around. And we just talked about doing the radio station. We even actually had the studio set up, even though we weren't officially on the air. And no one really had any real experience in radio. So we just started practicing, pretending like we were on the air. In fact, we were taping entire shows. And people would just come in the studio and play records and talk on the radio.
This is a test. This is a test. Will this record?
Oh, God, I hope so.
I wrote a lot of letters and did whatever I could do to move the process along, but you know, it was, you're dealing with bureaucracy, so it takes a long time to get anything done. And other than going to school, that was pretty much my full-time priority, trying to get this station going.
McCabe led the process to create the new student radio station at Boise State until the FCC granted approval to go on air with non-commercial KBSU at 10 watts. In 1977.
Hello, my name's W. David Fields, and I host KBSU's Insomniac Special, Sunday mornings 2 to 6 a.m. My first 40 minutes to an hour is comedy, plush, a little bit of my own insanity and bizarre imitations. After that, I play everything from The Doors to the Doobie Brothers, from the Moody Blues to Mahogany Rush, plus jazz and country.
All of this 2 to 6 a.m. Sunday mornings on the Insomniac Special with W. David Fields. Music, humor, and general A1 entertainment on progressive, alternative, non-commercial KBSU.
Along with Gary McCabe, who took on the role of general manager of the news station, the leadership at KBSU in the early days consisted of students, operations director Dave Schwartz, music director Rob Campbell, and program director Rich Landucci.
Richard Landucci, the first program director here at KBSU FM, 1976. Gary McCabe, the first general manager, it was his vision, not mine. I came in secondary, and you know, he did the foundation work and got it to the point where the crew was assembled. We had a lot of practice sessions for, I don't think it was for a couple of months, and we went on the air 24 hours a day from day one. But we had to fight tooth and nail for everything we got.
Another person greatly involved at the outset and to this day on KBSU is Carl Scheider.
My name is Carl Scheider. Gary McCabe found me in the Student Union building. He hooked me real fast. And I worked at KBSU from the very beginning. Gary was the general manager, and Rich Landucci was the program director. Dave Schwartz was the operations director. And Rob Campbell, the late Rob Campbell, was our first music director and the best one we ever had. So I got involved after Gary left, and he left shortly after we went on, and he graduated. So the staff were turned over, was we graduated people out, so I moved up kind of that way and ended up being the program director in 77 and 78, and then left, and then came back, and then left, and then came back. I'm not sure, I can't remember exactly how many times I did that, but it's very hard to get out of radio once you get into it, because you really, if you like it, I mean, it's just, you know, it's part of your life. And we really had a diverse group of people too that really liked different things. Country people, we had a lot of folkies, and then we had Arthur, who came out of nowhere and volunteered to do overnights. And we all, you know, genuflected in front of him because nobody wanted to do overnights, and he just stayed and did them. And he just did his own thing.
Arthur Ballinger had moved to Boise from the Bay Area and started as a steadfast volunteer with an early morning show on KBSU. He can still be heard each day on the air.
I started liking rock and roll around 1954 or 55 when I was in the second grade. I had to have my dad buy me 45s of, you know, Bill Haley and the Comets and early Elvis Presley.
Well, I heard the news. That's good to rock it tonight. Well, I heard the news. That's good to rock it tonight.
The winter of 76, 77, someone told me there's a new college station. You ought to listen to it. They play good things from time to time. So I said, all right, I'll see what I can find on my radio. Bingo. All of a sudden, I tune in to the long 15-minute version of Spoonful by Cream that no one would ever play on any other station at the time. And I went, oh, I've got to know these people. And that was it. Well, who could forget when I went down to KBSU at the little shack on College Boulevard and walked into a staff meeting, and I happened to have a gift to give them at that moment, and it was the first stellar album by the Paul Butterfield Blues Band.
When I was 17 years old, well, there's one thing I can say about that boy. He died old.
I wasn't complaining. I was just making suggestions. I had a lot of energy directed that way, so I suggested could they play them, and bought material for the station, donated it. Gary McCabe called me and said, Arthur, you have to do your own show. I said, okay. It was the Dawn Flight or the Dawn Patrol, something like that. It may not even had a name then, and the show actually started at 4 a.m. and went to 8 a.m. 4 a.m. So I'm playing up-tempo rock at 4. I didn't care if anyone was listening or not. But there was always someone listening. It was amazing. I was just glad to have the shift, the first shift that I had.
I'm Jeff Faraday, and this is KBSU-FM in Boise, broadcasting from the campus of Boise State University, of course, with 10 watts of power still coming out at you. Hope you like it, if you do, or if you don't, or if you'd like to request something, call in, and we'll see if we can come up with your requests and take your advice, or ignore it, or whatever else is appropriate. So give me a call.
Charlotte Mixon Lanier and Bob Lilly were students. They started as music hosts in the first days on KBSU. They recall the surprise of how little experience was required to get involved.
How did you hear about it?
Okay, well, I was in the student union because I lived in the student union, and there was a big group of us, and I had worked in a couple of the local record stores. So I was already really well-versed in kind of what was going on musically, and David Freisinger came up to me and said, "Hey, would you like to be on the radio and have a radio show?" And I went, "What?" And he said, "Well, you know, I hear you know a lot about music." I said, "Well, I do know a fair amount." And he said, "Well, I think, you know, we need some women on this radio station we're starting called KBSU, and you're perfect for it. Why don't you come in and I'll train you?" And I said, "Oh, what the hell? Get me out of the student union." And so I just started on the radio, and I did everything. I did classical music, and which I didn't really have a big background in other than my mom raised me listening to Metropolitan Opera every Saturday. And then I did Blues Deluxe with Dwight Fry and Jerry Carter. And I also did a reggae show. And I just filled in when it, wherever they needed it. All the peacemakers turn war officers.
Over the first few years, KBSU touted itself Boise's only progressive FM and Treasure Valley's only alternative, on the dial at 90.1 of a kind. KBSU became a cultural institution of sorts, presenting music and performers previously unheard by most of the audience who could get the signal. It provided a small but important platform to musicians and radio personalities who otherwise might not have had a voice in Boise. Local artists like the High Tops, Swivel Tones, and Rosalie Sorrells were a fixture over the airwaves.
I used to live in a big, fine house with many rooms and a wide open door.
And then I was really involved in the women's movement when it first started in Boise. So we had women's news.
The only place you could get that kind of news in all of Boise.
And then we also started women's production company, and we brought people in to perform. Like Holly Neer came here. We interviewed her on KBSU. I interviewed Chris Williamson and Rosalie Sorrells.
Though KBSU didn't reach far from the Boise State campus, many who knew about it were excited about the new station. Here's Bob Lilly.
I didn't think I had a chance in hell. And I was one of the first people that was approved. And I went, no, no, no. But I kept the time, and I practiced.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I went on the air, right after you, I played Welcome to the Machine by Pink Floyd. It has a 60-second intro. Mm-hmm. And I did it, and I did it, boom, I stopped, and I hit this post. And I went, wow, that sounds good. Then I said, on KBSU, welcome my son, and it was perfect.
Welcome my son, welcome to Machine. Where have you been? It's all right, we know where you've been.
Managed and run by students and volunteers from the community, KBSU was a completely different type of radio station. Shows like Global Rhythms, Jazz Spectrum, Radio Free Reggae, and Rockology brought a unique experience to listeners in Boise. Linda Laz got involved and was a host on the station for over 30 years.
The thing that got me interested about KBSU is my husband and I were in a restaurant downtown, and we heard this radio station. I think they were playing Jethro Tull, and we were going, oh, what is this? Because we hadn't heard anything like that in Boise. I got to listen more, and they were looking. Kevin Feltz was announcing that they needed news people, and that's how I got involved. And yeah, I just jumped right in there. But my heart was always with the music. Everybody just wanted to be able to share the music that they had and they knew about with others, with the community.
Nobody had ever played rock and roll, real rock and roll, on the radio in this town. Never. Other towns had...
Well, blues and jazz, too. I mean, it was not just rock and roll.
There you go.
It was this broad spectrum, world music, you know, and that was when reggae started really happening and The Clash.
And then Rob Campbell had the audacity to bring punk music to town.
Oh, I loved him.
There was a faction at KBSU that was outraged. And then another faction was like, we can't go far enough.
Lulu Kiss Me Dead with Sage and Bauhaus, LaGarcia and Nick started us all off on this wonderful mutant pop show.
Next to the punk lifestyle, there is the music. 22-year-old Sean Wyatt hosts a radio show called Mutant Pop every Wednesday night on KBSU. He plays 4 hours of punk rock, and the phone rings often with requests.
Most of us were like rockers when we came in, but we were trying to find all the new stuff we could. And then other people would come in and go, we had guys that did classical, because we had concert hall on Sunday from the very beginning. Yeah, this was a classical. This was an open station. We had jazz programs. We had a reggae show. We had mutant pop late at night. We'd play all the bands that just had come out, and it was pretty fun. So it was just a lot of people with a lot of different musical tastes. And when Rob Campbell was our music director, he was really good at bringing stuff in, finding things, and new music was always coming in. And so we were really, it was really exciting. I remember REM, when they first came out, where we played them first. We played a lot of artists first. There was no rock station around in Boise when we started. There were top 40 stations and adult contemporary, you know, and music of your life, and a lot of really boring radio.
A close-knit group of people maintained KBSU into the 1980s. In 1981, the transmission was increased from 10 to 100 watts to reach further from Boise State's campus. Marla Leggett was the general manager in the early 80s.
We went as a group to a radio conference in Oakland one time. And, you know, we went to this conference. We saw Bill Graham. We heard lectures. We did all kinds of things with radio people there. And people were like, you're doing what? You're allowed? You can do that? So it's kind of like by the time we left, we felt like we were the ones that were kind of showing people what could be done. You know, music started to change in the 60s and 70s, and people were excited about it. And we felt it was our, you know, responsibility to expose people to this music so they could have an opportunity to hear it. And it really kind of spiraled into, you know, these artists coming to town, and our station became known for hearing music that you never heard ever anywhere else. I think the station was on the air at the right time.
Hey!
When Wayne Burt first heard the station, he fell in love with the music immediately.
I believe I had heard KBSU before, and that moment was crystal clear to me because I had a Volkswagen Bug. I was driving in from Meridian, and I heard New Order's Temptation, and it was just like space alien music to me. I was like, what is this? And had I had a tractor beam on my car, I probably would have followed it all the way to the source. It took me a year to meet a guy to find the source of it, but it was a great moment. I came about it through some roommates just living not far off campus. I remember one night I said, where are you going with all those records? He goes, oh, I've got a radio show at KBSU. And like it always was for people who first start doing a music program, it was like a 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. program. It's something that I could easily go, wow, let's go, you know, being like 23 years old or whatever. So we walked the 6 blocks or so up to the old house on University Drive, and I stayed with him. We did the show, and ever since that, I was hooked. I mean, it became this instant thing. I became this guy that was in hot pursuit of the program director at KBSU. I harangued him until I got my own 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. show, and it began that way. It was great. The mantra in those days was mix, mix, mix to last. If you did a mix show, you were supposed to honor that contract in a really, you know, concrete sort of way. So it was like you would play world music, blues, jazz, the whole gamut. You would play a set that probably featured four or five of those things. And I think about it now, what a far cry from the way that, you know, radio in many ways gets formatted now. And it was no question that I kept doing it. I mean, there was the place for me because I certainly didn't have the breadth of musical knowledge to fill it in an accomplished way. But, you know, they had those carts of albums that you could pick from that were rated and decorated on the labels. Beautiful colored stars and stuff like that. So I'm like, 3.5 stars. Yeah, I'll do it.
This new wide variety of music meant listeners experienced different sounds from around the world, which allowed for discovery and artistic expression.
It was eye-opening. It definitely was. I mean, that the tapestry was even more than you could possibly have imagined. Like that first time I heard the New Order song, you know, it's like, well, that's just a drop in the ocean, you know, and there's so much more than that. Yeah, it was crazy. It was like, it was like a great cerebral buffet dinner. Everything seemed bottomless. It was crazy, crazy cool.
It was magic. It was absolute magic, you know, to be driving in my car away from the campus and hearing that record on the turntable that, you know, we installed. You know, we physically built the station ourselves with our own hands.
Sitting around the house on a Thursday evening might be pretty dull if not for KBSU's jazz program. Beginning at 7 p.m. every Thursday, Boise's only Progressive FM presents for your ears 3 full hours of the finest in jazz music. Whether it's an oldie from the big band era or the latest from today's rising talents, host Michael Zuzel makes Thursday evenings something to look forward to. That's the jazz program, Thursdays from 7 until 10, on the Treasure Valley Alternative, KBSU.
We were in a tiny little house at 1910 University Boulevard. The sign itself, we physically assembled and put up on the building.
We did a lot of stuff that would just seem weird these days. We put egg cartons on the wall because we thought we needed some soundproofing in the studio. So we went and got all of these old cardboard egg cartons and put them up on the wall. And it was just exciting, you know, when you're a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid. This is big stuff.
Sort of that time was like opening the door to this new secret society, you know, which is really funny. And I think it expressed itself in a lot of ways. That picture is perfectly clear in my head of that old house. You know, it had that lobby with a few old ratty couches, and then you'd walk through to the back and there was a window, but all the albums were stacked up against the broadcast, you know, the control board.
The house was set up, it had a front office, and the living room was just a living room. And then as you went down the halls, there was a room for the news, a room for master control. And that's it.
We had two really nice couches that people slept on a lot because they wouldn't leave. You know, they'd just hang out. We stayed at that little house. We hung out there all the time. We were always there.
And it was a very, very old house. Oh, my gosh. And I remember walking back into what they called the newsroom, and the floor was buckled. And so it was real old and crickety. And they had the main studio where people played the music in one room, and then they changed it over to another, I guess just for space. Yeah, we just grew out of that so fast, because the more records you get and stuff, then where are you going to put them?
It was just a little house, which is now a parking lot.
On numerous occasions, we talked about this with other late-night programmers, is you could sometimes... Security is what amazed me. There was no security on that building whatsoever. So you could walk out into the lobby and some guy would be standing there. Just, who heard the radio or some homeless guy walking down the street or whatever, which was like, wow, this is very accessible. And it'd usually be some funny guy going, hey, how's it going? What are you doing in there? You go, oh, I'm playing a music show, and you'd talk a few minutes and everything would be okay. But those are kind of eerie, startling moments, you know, and I think perfectly indicative of what a modest operation KBSU was at the beginning, right? It was just a little signal transmitted out of a house.
At 3 a.m., I'm doing the dawn flight, and the door was open to the house, and it was in the summer, so it's warm weather. And all of a sudden, in the middle of a set, these three or four seemingly punk rocker type young fellows came in holding their beer cans saying, we're going to hold you hostage until you play punk music. And I went, sure, no problem. And I stopped the set in mid-set and said, I have some friends here, some guests, and they've suggested X, I believe it was, an LA punk band, and we're going to hear some X right now. So I played X, and they were so happy that I was playing that for them. They calmed down and said, thanks, man, thanks. Oh, this is great. And then they left. But as they left, they took some, you know, the station license off the wall and a few other things.
In 1985, KBSU moved from its little house, which was to be demolished, to the communication building on Boise State's campus. Even after KBSU began transmitting with 100 watts, the signal could only be heard within limited proximity to the university campus. Even in Boise, only a few neighborhoods could actually pick up the signal.
In the North End, it was amazing because KBSU came so clearly into my house. My little small house at the time, which was up an alley in the North End, I got it so clearly. It was, this is meant to be or something, because a lot of people couldn't get it.
I think our biggest audience was in the North End where all the hippies lived. You know, now it's a little more upscale, but it was pretty much, that's where a lot of us lived anyway. And so we had a lot of audience there. It was just basically with anybody that could actually get us, you know. They'd have elaborate homemade antenna systems and, you know, tell us how they got us and stuff. I mean, when we were in that little old house, it was hard to keep it on the air sometimes. We used to, there was a bare wire somewhere on the roof that would kill squirrels every now and then. So we'd go off the air while somebody fixed the gut, you know, pick the squirrel off, you know, fried squirrel on top. And it was kind of funny. But, so it was really small. It was all community, really community oriented as much as student oriented. Most of the jocks when we started were students, but that kind of shifted, especially for overnight hours with guys like Arthur coming in. So it became kind of a combination of students and community, and it meshed pretty well.
We tried to reach out to the community so they would grab onto us a little bit more. And it was about the music, especially in the beginning, it was about the music. And we also provided things like Lost and Found Cat and Dog Report, a ride report, you know, anybody going to Nampa on Wednesday, can I get a ride?
Sue would like to go to Moscow sometime between the 14th and 15th or so, she says, and she'll share the usuals. One last one, Kit would like to go to Reno, Nevada the 17th or 18th of this month, and she'll share the usuals. Kit, maybe it's an animal. 344-6062, ride report. It's time now for the 11 o'clock album. Let me remind you that the following hour's broadcasting is being brought to you by you, the general public, and the ASBSU of Boise State University. All that. This is a new album that I just purchased down at the Record Exchange for exorbitant prices. I hope they're happy that it's now being aired. So you sit there and listen to this, and we'll talk to you on side two.
In the same year KBSU officially began broadcasting, Boise's cultural scene was growing as well. 1977 saw the first year in business for the Record Exchange and the first performance at the Idaho Shakespeare Festival. In the years to come, Boise would see significant growth in population. Later in the 80s, KBSU's power rose from 100 to more than 2,000 watts, and its transmitter moved to Table Rock. The signal then reached further into the growing communities of the Treasure Valley.
felt like it was a way that you kind of got to know your community. It shed light, you know, not only having the broadcast, you know, make people more aware of what's going on in their community, the people doing the broadcast became more aware of the community because of the way they would interact with us. It's like you and me, back and forth, it all works.
It was a place, it was a home. Yeah, my son grew up on the couch. He spent a lot of time listening to music himself, sitting on the couch in KBSU and coming to work with me. I was in a circle of friends that became lifelong friends. Friends like Carl Scheider and Charlotte Mixon helped me with my son, offered babysitting services and rides and things like that. I was with people that enjoyed music as much as I did, and branching out into the community became very good friends with a lot of people that were listeners. It was a life changer for me to be involved with such a close-knit group of people and to have the music that we were able to share with the community.
Listening to KBSU Boise. The following hour's programming is being brought to you in part through funding provided by the Associated Students of Boise State University. It's about 3 minutes until the hour of 11 a.m. on Tuesday morning, and my name is Carlotta, taking you into the early afternoon hours.
We were the first when it came to so many things in this town. If we'd have been born in San Rafael, California, it all would have been done before. But we came from Boise, Idaho, and nothing had happened here.
The local music scene really, when we started in the 70s, wasn't really that vibrant. It was, by the time we got into the 80s, it had grown a lot. It wasn't really that, there weren't that many bands that I knew about. Groups like the Quirks or Notary Sojack and a couple others that were local that I didn't ever see that much. But it really wasn't that vibrant. But it grew more, and I think KBSU had a little bit to do with that. People learning about more music, getting more interested in being musicians, musicians hearing stuff, going, wow, I could play that. Or, you know, creating a band because they heard somebody else do something that they thought they could do. Sympathetic collaboration, because the bands would learn from us, and then we'd do things with the bands. And it was growing. And there weren't, like I said, there weren't that many venues. We had the Bouquet. As I recall, there was a Crazy Horse for a while. Both those are closed. And there were just a couple of others. Tom Graney's would have music. But there really weren't that many music venues. So, you know, we would find these bands being in a garage or something and bring them out and put them on a benefit. We were always tied in with the cool shows as a promotional deal. From REM, that came straight out of a phone call I got in the office one day. Some guy asked if we knew anybody that could promote a show, and I'd done a couple of KBSU benefits with my little production company. They loved it. They said that one of their favorite shows they did that whole tour was the Mardi Gras Ballroom with this stage. It's barely 7 or 8 inches off the ground. And, you know, I mean, there's so many stories about that show. Just the fact that the owner, Orson Merrill, prided his dance floor above all. And here come these guys wheeling in these gigantic speakers. And we had a power issue. So now I don't know what the statute of limitations on stuff is, but we had to get power from somewhere. and somebody had some bolt cutters, and I don't know. Well, that was huge. We packed the Mardi Gras. We overpacked it, and people that couldn't get in were bummed. But we, you know, we were really involved with the community as far as that goes, and musically speaking.
And we did all these things to just bring community in, to make us feel like, you know, you can get whatever you need on our radio station.
As KBSU grew in popularity and reach, the university shifted its intentions for the station.
President John Kaiser saw an opportunity, as Boise was the last capital city in the country without an NPR station, and he wanted to make KBSU an NPR affiliate. In 1986, Kaiser hired Jim Paluzzi to be the general manager of KBSU. Paluzzi was tasked with shifting KBSU from a student-run community radio station to a national public radio affiliate. He had done the same at KSLU in southeastern Louisiana.
'86. I was managing a station in Hammond, Louisiana, my first public radio station. You know, I was pretty young at the time, and it was always difficult when you're young to deal with bureaucracy, you know, and every organization has it. And so back in the day when I was kind of fed up with bureaucracy and I was in Louisiana, I'd fire off a resume, and there was something about dropping that resume in the mail. I never intended to act on it. I just wanted to get it out of my system, and it was my cathartic way, so I'd drop one occasionally in the mail. And wouldn't you know, Boise State called me. And I said, well, I'd never been to Idaho, and sounds like a free trip, so go and do the interview. And I had no idea how seductive Boise could be, and you know, what a great place Idaho is. And we had a great president at that time, John Kaiser, who convinced me that this was a place to be because it's really the center of the universe. Well, I looked for a typewriter that worked and didn't find one, so I brought one from home. I remember coming in and seeing an announcer coming out of a studio, and he had a cartridge tape in his hand. And back in the day, they used these cartridge tape. They were like cassettes. And I said, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm recording the Sunday newscast. And I said, but this is Friday. And he says, yeah, but I don't come in on Sundays. And it was that kind of, well, you know, we're kind of having fun with radio approach.
After nearly 10 years of student control at KBSU, Jim Paluzzi started in motion the effort to bring national news programs and daytime classical music to the station. KBSU would change considerably, and much of the staff turned over as well. Though Paluzzi drew the ire of some in the community, he plodded forward.
Everything's changed.
These kinds of transitions are never fun, and they're never easy. And I remember when I met with the president then, and he said, do you think we can do this? I said, well, there'll be sparks. And boy, there were sparks.
We had fought and fought and fought for so many years just to get enough money to stay on the air. And then all of a sudden somebody goes, oh, wow, a little diamond in the rough here. Let's see how much we can make it grow. And you know, and at first it was pretty exciting, but we had no idea that the intent was to change the programming. It was heartbreaking. It really was, because we felt like we'd done all this footwork and all this, you know, exposure to music and community and helping people and things like that. And it was just saying, you know, without even a pat on the back, it's like, okay, that's done. You know, it's just done. We're changing. And we're like, wait, this is our station. This is the student-run station. This is our station. We built it. We want to keep it.
You know, we saw everything from the buttons. I think I still have some of the buttons that have the call letters and barbed wire that say FM worth fighting for, you know, and there were bumper stickers. I used to listen to KBSU, and you know, what do you do? It's your job to do something, and there are a whole bunch of people that really were disenfranchised by it.
Possessive. We're very possessive of this radio station from the early days. Very possessive of this radio station. You know, we put our lives into this. There, you know, we tried really hard, and we got the community involved. And there's a lot of bitterness still with a lot of people that worked here at that time.
I really wanted it to be a student-run station. I really thought that was important. There were lots of people who were very angry that this was happening.
On a Friday afternoon, an announcer, comes to work with some 2x4s and a hammer. And, you know, we thought that was interesting. Went in and proceeded to close the door of the studio and barricade it with 2x4s so we couldn't get in, and then proceeded to do his show reading manifestos against the administration of the university and against the management of the station. Fortunately for us, we had rewired the routing system, so we had switched to another studio to continue programming and did his three-hour show and never knew that it never left the studio because we had patched around it. But it was a great manifesto. I'm sure he enjoyed himself. Is that resistance? Is that kind of, well, it's a statement. Yeah, everybody's entitled to their beliefs. It just so happens to be that there is, you know, authority, and the license was granted to the university, and the person in charge of the university and the administration decided that they wanted to make a change. And it wasn't that crazy of a change. It was just to bring public radio to the last state capital in the country.
People, you know, in the weeks leading up to the change, as people's last shows came up, certain people started to speak out on the air and were physically removed from speaking on the mic, which was kind of interesting radio. But a lot of stuff happened. You know, people were pulled off the mic. There was one DJ that blocked the door to the studio and he climbed out the second floor window with a bunch of sheets tied together and all his albums in the other arm. There was a lot of rebellion in that. So it became pretty clear to me that I had to be a little more secretive about the whole thing. So I did my last show. Although I should clarify that I was asked to stay. I was asked to be the evening guy in the new regime. And I did think about it, but not for very long. The feeling just didn't feel right. I couldn't have explained it any more succinctly than that. It just didn't feel right. So the next week when I went in and I was hosting that show Meet and Pop, which was kept around on a Wednesday evening, I had actually recorded a cassette with, you know, my spiel of what had happened and then a few songs, and I put the cassette in and then I left, and then I went home and listened to it. We had a party, and that was kind of the end of our association with KBSU. It was a sting to have to leave like freeform radio and community radio. There's something that felt innately wrong about it.
That's indeed what happens when you make change. You've got to be prepared for resistance. On the other hand, it's the vision of what could be, the things that you don't see yet, the things that you see right now in this beautiful studio, all came from that little tiny hovel with a beat up, ratty couch to today. It is just the mark of progress. Now, some people yearn for those old days. Yeah, I kind of yearn to ride on a horse and buggy too, but it's not going to happen.
Well, I remember, you know, when the transition happened, and so I was going in and arguing with Kaiser and going to all these different meetings and saying, no, you can't take this away. And he told me, he said, you know, when I'm out fundraising for Boise State, the people say, hey, you guys got a winning football team, don't you? Yeah, good. And you got a basketball team, you got this. Do you have an NPR radio station? And I always have to tell the fundraising people, we don't have a NPR radio station. And so what I'm doing here, Bob, is I'm taking this radio station away from you because it's mine and not yours, and I'm going to turn it into an NPR radio station, and that way we'll be able to fundraise. And this town went through a transition. It was like a death that was never, there was no resurrection. It was just dead.
As a further part of our telecommunications offering, I remind you that today, January 12, 1987, is when KBSU begins national public radio programming.
For me, it was never a question of control. Because, you know, when I arrived here, I knew exactly who was in control. It was the administration of the university. It's the licensee. You know, it was never a question of control. It's really a question of vision. And, you know, could we create a common shared vision that would reflect the values of as many people in the community as possible? with the resources that we had while still maintaining the prime directive, which was to bring public radio to Boise and parts thereof.
In 1988, KBSU increased its signal strength to 19,000 watts and moved the transmitter to its present location on Deer Point, adjacent to Bogus Basin Ski Resort. President John Kaiser was quoted in the Idaho Statesman as claiming KBSU was the best public radio station between Seattle and Denver. Also in 88, news talk station KBSX got its own transmitter. These comprised the first major additions to the Boise State Public Radio Network, which grew to cover most of southwestern Idaho by the early 2000s. The legacy of KBSU continues as over 100,000 listeners each week tune in to hear news and music from around the world and from right here in Idaho on Boise State Public Radio.
Citizens Alliance files its petition. Good morning, I'm Dave Foch. The ICA has thrown down the gauntlet as opponents of the anti-gay initiative gird for battle. The health and welfare budget before JFAC and the problems with feeding deer and elk. These stories and the weather ahead, it's BSU Radio News.
I'm Dave Foch. I'm a member of the Community Advisory Board. Well, at the point I came on, they wanted to bring a news service to not just the Treasure Valley area, but to spread this news service into rural Idaho. And that was really kind of exciting, as I recall at the time. And I still think that's a pretty powerful piece of the job of Boise State Public Radio.
I'm Tom Michael. I'm general manager of Boise State Public Radio. Well, I think coming to a station that's 40 years on is a real honor to see all the names and the people that came before you that helped build it. At one point in my career, I built a public radio station from scratch, so I know all the sweat and the blood and the tears that went into building these things. So it's a real tip of the hat to those folks that helped manage the station and build the station in the past.
At the end of the day, I think we found a way to transition from the community student radio station to what you would consider to be a typical public radio station without throwing out the babies. You know, we kept programs like Mutant Pop on the air. You know, Arthur Ballinger, who started back in 77, is still on the air today. You know, we had the idea that people who live in this town should have a public radio station that reflects the community. And so, to the limit of our resources at the time, we strive to do that. Keeping in mind that we had yet another mission, which was to extend public radio to many communities that had none. You know, places like Stanley, Idaho, like Salmon. Back in the day, people would mail cassettes of Prairie Home Companion around from places like Minnesota for the poor, deprived people of Idaho.
It's not viable to have a commercial station in Stanley, Idaho. It's not viable to have a station with advertising in Challis or Salmon, but it's part of our public service. We need to serve these areas. So thank goodness that they kept a radio club and a radio station and a radio signal going, because in some markets they disappeared. And luckily for us, we've had listeners that have stuck with us the whole way. That's the definition of impact, isn't it? When people respond to the work you do.
There has been a good segment of loyal listeners, and that has grown through the years. Helping the station to continue on.
It's great that it's still here. The growth of this station's been amazing, and it's still, you know, it's still growing. Still has room for change and room for growth, and it's nice to be able to come in here and do what I do every Saturday. Gary McCabe does not ever get the recognition he deserves, and he should. he never really got to enjoy very much of it. He got to do all the work and then gone. They should have a plaque. At least a plaque. Maybe a bust. That's what he needs. A Gary McCabe bust.
He started this whole thing, and he worked for 3 years before the rest of us even knew it was happening.
That's true.
Boise was the only major capital in America that didn't have a college radio station.
Yeah.
It would have happened. But the way it was is that Gary McCabe did it, and that Charlotte and I were involved, and our lives were changed.
It's a really small community of media people in this market. So it's incredible how many of us have gone on to other careers. And I think it's because of places like Boise State Public Radio that gave us our first opportunity to have a voice and for people to recognize that maybe we did have something to say.
I didn't have a Jones. I didn't have a musical Jones. I just showed up because I thought it might be interesting. And he pointed out to me, without saying anything, that I did have a dream. I didn't even know what my dream was until Gary McCabe showed up. He shared his dream with me. And sometimes I think it was a mistake. And other times I can't believe how lucky I got to pursue this as a career.
Well, 40 years later, I'm still really interested in music and also what's going on in the community. And I've gotten to work with record companies and, you know, I've gotten to have that experience. I mean, I feel really fortunate about that.
It's always exhilarating to do a show. You don't think about the other shows or what's coming up in a week. It's the immediate music at the moment, and you've got to create a flow of it. So it's always a challenge. It's creative, exhilarating. And if you're playing good music, it's moving to your very depths.
I've talked to Ringo Starr, Carlos Santana, James Taylor, you name it. It would be easier to tell you who I haven't talked to. I've broadcast from Tokyo, Brisbane, London, LA, Jamaica. The things that were afforded to me, all because Gary McCabe did this.
I thought it could be both a good thing and a bad thing. The bad part, of course, would be that, a lot of the stuff that had been going on would cease to exist, because that's how it happens when things change. But I also knew that Boise needed an NPR station, and I knew that that was going to happen eventually somewhere. And so it really didn't surprise me that they decided to go ahead and make that change.
In bigger media markets, it was always clear to me that NPR and community radio stations coexisted. It really just took experiencing some change and being able to help launch Radio Boise. But when I'm listening, and I will freely admit this, you know, I listen to Radio Boise, obviously, but I listen to your station more than ever. You know, I think they're incredible complements to each other. And I think they're a really good indicator of how healthy and what a good state the city of Boise is in, or Treasure Valley right now. So I love it.
During that time, I felt it was really political. And it was, because so many people were losing something that they were able to do. But after everything got calmed down, I think it was fine. It wasn't political anymore. It was just doing what's right for the station. You know, I realized that we don't have an NPR station here. And there really are a lot of good programs, even though they're not us, but I saw the value of having NPR here.
A good thing about Jim Paluzzi is that even though we made that transition to NPR, he was willing to have the people stay on. He didn't get rid of anyone. People automatically assumed that there was going to be a civil war and left in a huff. He was open to have anyone stay. I mean, he kept the punk show, for example. To be honest, there were things with our station that was never that good. I mean, there were things that could have gotten much better, and they got better when Jim Paluzzi came here.
I am Samantha Wright. You know, some people really, really liked it when we switched to NPR because they wanted an NPR station, they wanted those shows, they wanted to hear some of that. And some people were just livid that, you know, the college station had been overrun by the man, I guess would be. I heard that several times from listeners. Yeah, you caved to the man. but I think it was interesting because at one point when we diversified to KBSU and KBSX, and KBSX became the talk and KBSU became the music, we kind of found a groove because, you know, we had a place for all that music that everybody wanted, who had loved the original station and the genres that it was able to bring to the area. And then KBSX brought the NPR side that so many people had been craving and had been hungering for. So that was the best of both worlds.
Oh, yeah. The variety that's available on BSU Radio now is pretty amazing. It has had an enormous impact on the community, and it opens up Boise, Idaho to the world, really. And you get a lot of things out of BSU Radio that you just wouldn't get anywhere else in town. It's just like that. Back in those days, we were just a bunch of 70s hippie kids doing a radio station. That's as far as anybody thought back in those days, so... I think the impact that the cultural impact has been amazing over the years.
Thanks to everyone who has helped make KBSU, the BSU Radio Network, and Boise State Public Radio thrive through the years. Kudos to the station's founders, the hundreds of student and professional employees and volunteers who've been involved since the late 70s. Through Boise State Public Radio's more than 40-year history, students have aided in operations, reporting, engineering, events, fundraising, and programming. Of course, a special thank you to the many thousands of listener contributors who appreciate the services and remain passionate supporters. This special program was produced and edited by Alexandria Ravella, Andrew Fisher, and me, Eric Jones. You can find a playlist for this documentary, learn more about KBSU's history, and let us know what we left out at boisestatepublicradio.org. Thanks so much for joining us for I Used to Listen to KBSU, an origin story.